fields of bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news.
And I'm Dan Dugan, the other guy on the other side. WGRN, the Green Renaissance.
You're listening to WGRN 94.1, the other side of the news. I'm here with the Honorable Terry Jameson, who's running for re-election to the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas, the Division of Domestic Relations, and the Juvenile Branch. Welcome, Judge Jameson.
Thank you, Bob.
And I've always found it interesting that you came to be a judge not by a traditional occupational route. Could you tell our listeners a little of what I think is a fairly unique background for a judge?
Well, I grew up in West Virginia, and we know that is the heart of coal mining country. Well, it used to be anyway when I was growing up. My first job, I worked for the Department of Welfare. I was an eligibility specialist. I did training for daycare providers on putting together menus and making sure that they had nutritious lunches for their children. And I was a fraud investigator for Department of Welfare. I left that position to become an underground coal miner. And so I'm a certified UMWA member. I worked for U.S. Steel.
You got your union card?
You know, I have it somewhere.
Yeah.
I have it somewhere, but, you know, I've been asked about that. You know, you have to do 6 months of a probationary period. When you initially go into the mines, you wear a red cap, so everybody knows that you are new. They call you a cherry head. And so I wore a red cap for 6 months, passed my probationary period, got certified, got to paint my cap black, and worked at U.S. Steel, as I said. When I got laid off at U.S. Steel, I worked at Ogle Coal Company. So I worked at two different mines before I got laid off. And I stayed laid off for about a year, and I decided to move to Ohio.
All right. And when you came to Ohio, did you go to law school then?
I did not. I went to the CETA program and learned how to do data.
I was in the CETA program before Ronald Reagan did it in.
Comprehensive Employment Training Act. So when I moved here, I had the benefit of meeting Mr. Toler. I met Mr. Toler, and I was saying, you know.
And tell our listeners who Mr. Toler is.
That was Mr. Fred Toler. He was an attorney here in Columbus, well known. And he told me about the CETA program. Mm-hmm. I went there. I learned how to do data entry and key punch.
Right.
So that was my first job here was with the Xerox Corporation. So I worked for Xerox. I worked for OCLC. Then I got a job as an office manager for one of the first black insurance agents in town, Howard Tyler State Farm. Mm-hmm. I worked for him for 2 years. Then he said, why don't you get your own insurance agency? I got my insurance license, and I was hired by Allstate. So I had a contract with Allstate Insurance. I ran an agency for 16 years.
Well, when did you have enough time to get your Bachelor of Science degree from Franklin University, cum laude?
I went to Franklin while I owned my insurance agency. So I worked full-time day and went to school at night.
And what was your major?
Business administration and human resources management. I was in the human resources. That's my minor. I was one class short of having an HR degree, and I had decided I was going to go to law school. So business management worked.
All right. And when I was in CETA, they had a list of jobs. I took assistant manager at Recordland, home of the hits in a mall. It was a record
chain. Oh,
that's
cool.
Yeah, I was thinking freebies.
We all have those jobs that, you know, because I one time when I was a teenager, I worked for JCPenney. They gave you the best discounts.
Oh, they did? I mean, wait, what are we talking, 25%, 40%?
It was like 25% when I was working for JCPenney. And when I was with Allstate, Allstate was part of Sears Financial Network. They had Coldwell Banker. They had Sears, Dean Witter Reynolds.
Oh, I remember
And
that.
The dental.
Yeah, right inside the store.
Right inside the store. So I started at the Westland Mall in 1985.
Then what possessed you to go to law school at Capital University Law? If you've got a successful insurance business, you've got a degree, well, were you simply a masochist? You'd heard law school was really tough, and right, it's a night school, so
I actually sold my business and went full-time day. I worked nights.
Oh, okay.
I worked nights. I worked at Safe Light Auto Glass in the claims center overnight. While going to law school. So I worked my way through law school, too. I worked at Safe Light. I worked for MCI, the long distance. I sold cell phones for them. So I had a ton of different things going on when I was going to law school. I did an internship with the Franklin County Public Defender's Office. I did an internship in the civil rights section of the AG's office. Mm. I did an internship with the State of Ohio Bureau of State Hearings, all that while I was going to law school. And I still had to have a paying job. So I worked at Safe Light Auto Glass.
All right. But she ended up in the area of domestic relations and juvenile court. And to me, I hate to be biased here, but that seems a little emotional. When I'm thinking about law, I did one divorce case and sat in on it, and people get heated and emotional. It seems like psychologically one of the most difficult places to be, and one that you're seeing human suffering and emotion. That seems like that would be difficult. Who volunteers to run in that area? I mean, bless anyone who's in that area. But that's
when I was in private practice, I did domestic and I did juvenile. I was a guardian ad litem.
Oh, okay.
But I did a lot of criminal practice as well. So I did criminal trial work, juvenile trial work. I've had domestic relations trials. I even did probate. Mm-hmm. I did some complex probate cases where I had to file suit against a guardian that wouldn't release the funds to wouldn't do his final report. Mm-hmm. So we had opened the estate and he wouldn't do his final guardian report. So I had to sue him for concealment of assets. I did
because he's supposed to produce an inventory
within 30 days, and you're supposed to do your final report within 30 days of being notified of the death, and he didn't. So I had to sue him for concealment of assets. I did another other complex probate litigation, where in this particular case, I had some heirs that weren't the children of the wife. So I had to do an action to establish who the heirs were. So, I've handled cases where property was out of state, in state, out of county, in county. So I did a lot of litigation, too. And I did a couple of unemployment cases as well.
Yeah, a very complex area, but it gives you, you know, I can't say I've done any more than filing some wills.
Well, you know, it's just like any other civil practice. That probate court is a service just like domestic and juvenile.
Oh, absolutely.
Where you're dealing with people in crisis situations.
Right. I can imagine the stress in that area.
But initially, you know, Bob, I did think I wanted to be in the general division of common pleas. And now that...
Is that your attraction to felonies and heavy civil litigation?
It was. But I won the seat in domestic and juvenile court. And I know that I've been there now for 6 years. And I think I landed in the right court. I have the right temperament for it. I had domestic mediation.
What do you mean by that? What kind of temperament? You know, we always hear about judicial temperament.
Well, the temperament that you need when you're dealing with families in crisis, you got to be a person that can let people's insults roll off your back. And you can't escalate when they escalate. Because you have to look at it. You're talking about my most valuable possession, my children, my marriage, my marital home. You're talking about my retirement. Maybe it's a small business I've started. Maybe it's a larger business I've started. Mm-hmm. You're talking about all the things that represent who I am. So you need someone that can listen and not be insulted by what people think. I base my rulings on the law. And I've often told people, if you reach an agreement, you're going to have input in your decision. Mm-hmm. If I have to make a decision, neither one of you is really going to be happy with what I do. Because I'm going to look at it strictly by the law and not by the emotion that you're bringing to it. So I don't get emotional with them.
Well, if they get too emotional and don't come up with agreements, it can cost them a lot of money in the long run.
It can
seems
cost them a
far
lot
better.
Of
so
money.
Do you push for mediation? Do you?
Well, we have a mediation department. We also have a self-represented resource center that's located
which
on
like
the
a great idea.
Well, the self-represented resource center, we have a contract with Capital University Law School. Mm-hmm. They have two attorneys and two interns that work there full time. So if you don't have the resources and you meet the poverty guidelines and you just want to get a divorce, they can give you legal information, look over your paperwork, make sure that it's drafted properly, make sure you've covered all your bases in your decree, and you can bring it up and get your divorce. You have to have a decree to get divorced. But if you're a person that is so set on having your day in trial, we're there. You have a right to have a trial. You have a right to be heard. And you should always have an opportunity to speak to the judge if you want to.
I agree with you totally, but many of my clients want a trial based on a feeling often of being wrong, not the law. So,
well, that's true.
As a counselor, I kind of try and explain the law, that the fact that your spouse or significant other may have done something absolutely despicable often doesn't fit directly into the law.
Unless you can prove something like financial misconduct as a relation to their activity. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have a lot of issues because we have probably 60% of the people that come to our court are pro se litigants. So if you don't have the right temperament to deal with angry people or upset people, or like yesterday, I had two emergency custody motions that were before me. The one woman, the children's mother died 6 years ago. Last month, or earlier this month, rather, her son died. She's the grandmother coming to get mm-hmm. custody. Well, to get a suggestion of death, you need a death certificate. She didn't have proof that the mother was
right.
dead. So she's now got to get an opportunity to get her proof together to come back to get a suggestion of death on the mother as well.
And you're listening to Judge Terry Jamison of the Domestic Court here at WGRN 94.1. But in that case, as the judge and they're out there pro se, you direct them? Is that
no,
your
No, what
role?
I do, what I did, because she did have a death certificate for her son. So the suggestion of death could be made for him. I took her testimony. I granted it ex parte. And then I said, now I'm going to send you downstairs to talk to the legal clinic downstairs. Okay. To get information about how you get legal service, mm-hmm. so that when you come back, you'll be able to proceed without having to make numerous trips to court. You know, you don't want someone that's already grieving, maybe haven't spent their last money to mm-hmm. do a funeral, to have to come back repeatedly. So I advised her to go downstairs and talk to the attorneys on the, in the Self-Represented Resource Center, because based on her testimony, she was only getting Social Security. She's going to fall within the guidelines to be able to have legal assistance from them.
And you've helped develop the Compass Program docket, thought to be very innovative collaboration partnership with Franklin County Child Support Enforcement Agencies. But that doesn't always make everybody happy. What does that do, and why do you think it's so important to develop a program like this?
Well, this is why I developed it. I went to the bench in January of 13, and I was seeing the same people coming through court for non-payment of support.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at seeing the same people over and over, and we've already got a docket of 8,600 clients, cases each, I don't need to keep seeing you. So it just so happened, we had a case, and we developed an entry, and I was saying, well, if I could just find community partnerships of people that were willing to assist people in overcoming the barriers in their life, then they can become productive, they can support themselves, support their children, and have a relationship with their children. Because our statistics tell us that if a person is paying child support, he's more likely to have a relationship with the child.
Mm-hmm.
The mission of domestic relations and juvenile court is the best interest of the child. That's the standard for our court. So if I can get another parent engaged and help this child beat the odds of being addicted, suicidal, truant from school. You know, because they say if a single parent child is more likely to be involved in all of those.
And that's well established in the literature.
And it's well established. And I do a lot of reading. And I do a lot of reading about the issues that face children. So when I look at a child being told, oh, your dad's in jail because he didn't pay his child support, what does that do emotionally to the child, as well as the relationship that they have? So Susan Brown, the director of Child Support Enforcement Agency, and I had a meeting. We talked about it. We reached out into the community. We have Jewish Family Services, Goodwill, Godman Guild, Alva's House, the Urban League, Action for Children, Columbus Legal Aid Society. All of these community partners come to the court once a month, meet with the individuals, so I can link them to the services right there. They don't have to run around and try to figure out where to go. We can get them linked to somebody. They can get a contact number. They can get engaged in the services, and they can work on their situation. Now, we have many barriers. If you have criminal charges, Columbus Legal Aid Society may be able to help you with an expungement, might be able to help you get a certificate for employment qualification from your judge. You might not have a GED. Well, we have Goodwill, Godman Guild, Jewish Family Services will help you with your GED preparation. They'll help you with resume building. They help you with skills. Impact has skilled trades that you can take. So everybody has something that they have. And the reason I thought this was good is because this way we're not duplicating services. We're sending each one to one place to work.
Yeah, to develop or take care of certain needs. The old model, because I'm familiar with this, I used to deal with some clients in that area. A lot of them actually had skills, but they'd fall behind, or maybe they had a drinking or drug problem. So instead of sending them to rehab, they got put literally in prison for a few months, 6 months. Their license was taken away, and then they would drive without the license, and then their van would be impounded with all their tools, and the chances of ever sending money to your child would seem to vanish.
Well, that's the other thing. Quarterly, I do a job fair. I have the BMV come. They can talk to them right there, find out why their license is suspended.
I was in the court the other day for some minor thing in probate, and there were all these people there in line. And I asked, I said, why are all these people here? And they said they're trying to get their license reinstated. Then I ran into a guy, Mitch Schifrin, who's an insurance guy. And he's like, yeah, they bring insurance people down to the court and actually work in the court to restore people's license. And I'm thinking, that's incredible.
It is incredibly helpful. It's incredibly helpful because Columbus does not have the most transportation friendly.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
For individuals that don't own a car. So we have to be able to get these people reinstated, driving legally, able to pick up their children, because you can't do your parenting time
right
if you're picking your child up with a suspended license. Mm-hmm. So all of those things go hand in hand in helping the person, the family, become whole. Even if you don't live in the same household, you can operate as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, the transportation problem alone, you're going to end up getting picked up for no ops or no insurance, and it just compounds that whole problem.
Oh, it costs them thousands of dollars because you represent people in municipal court. And, you might get that first ticket, and it's maybe $120. But then if you didn't have insurance, you add a reinstatement fee for your driver's license. Now have to have an SR-22 or a high-risk policy, depending on what kind of car you have. That can be an astronomical charge. Mm-hmm. So those are things that you have to consider. And what we do has to be done in the best interest of the children. And that doesn't mean that mom or dad wins. Nobody wins in our court. Mm-hmm. You either reach an agreement or you get a court order. No, there is no winner. It's how do you minimize the damage.
And what are you seeing with the impact of the opioid crisis? And what, if anything, should we do about it in terms of general policy or the way the court operates?
Well, the court does have two recovery courts. We have a recovery court for juveniles, and we also have a recovery court for parents that their children have been are now involved in Franklin County Children's Services. You can go to our recovery court to assist you with reunifying with your child. We are seeing an increase of emergency custody motions for parents, grandparents, cousins, sisters, brothers, fathers, anyone that can take care of the child is coming down and asking for legal custody because they have an alternative response now with Franklin County Children's Services where they first try to put services in the home before they remove children now.
Right.
So we're seeing an increase in that number of cases, but our recovery court is also seeing an increase.
Which drives the next question. I see you've worked with the Franklin County Reentry Coalition.
And I chair the juvenile section.
And I've always wondered, you've got a situation where you're taking people away and either incarcerating them in whether it's juvenile detention or, prison. And what skill sets are coming forward and what services are available? When I first began to teach college is that we had all this money to go into prisons. And, you know, when I was a young professor, you know, I went in and taught prisons because the prisoners would give you a 5 out of 5. They were so happy that professors were showing up and teaching classes. But, you know, we also had data indicating that was the best thing you could do. The more they got degrees, the more education they got, they developed those skill sets, the less likely they were to ever to come back.
Doesn't that make you wonder why they took the money away?
Absolutely. Not only did they take the money away, they began draining from higher ed programs like that and building new prisons and jails.
Well, you know, we have, I think, approximately 50,000 individuals here in Ohio that are incarcerated. We have over 4,000 females incarcerated at this time. And when you look at the statistics of who went to prison last year, the numbers are increasing in all races. So you look at it and you say, why are we spending more money building prisons than we are on education? Why aren't we paying our teachers more so that they have the money and the resources that they need so that they can provide for their families and you can keep good educators?
And why are we incarcerating people with drug addictions?
That is true. I do not believe that people should be incarcerated that have addiction. I believe that they need treatment. But when you talk to a psychiatrist, counselor, they say until they're ready for the treatment. And with opiates, the estimated time is 18 months for that treatment. Mm-hmm. And they say it takes at least 7 times going into counseling for that before they, you know, that's the average. Mm-hmm. 7 times in treatment. And that treatment should last up to 18 months. Your health insurance does not cover an 18-month stint in recovery.
Well, it seems like a problem with health insurance. I know in England, the Netherlands, Portugal, all those places treat it as a medical problem and not as a...
It is a medical problem. It has. We have the data to show that it does affect the brain activity. Mm-hmm. We have that data, which is another reason I don't believe that we should be giving our children drugs to medicate them.
I'm with you. And
because you know, it's interfering with brain development.
No, and the psychotropic drugs... You know, my partner, you know, Connie Goodell Newton does guardium ad litem work, and you know, she comes home and tells me stories, and I'm going, can't be true.
Every child
you can't be drugging these kids.
Some type of diagnosis, ADHD.
The Diagnostical and Statistical Manual is. I mean, all of us have a diagnosis. It doesn't mean we all need to be drugged.
That's true. I think we have to spend more time teaching our children how to self-regulate.
Got a minute left. How can people get in touch with your campaign or check you out?
They can go on Facebook to reelect Judge Terry Jamison. They can go to www.re-elect.judgejamison2018.com. They can call 614-600-4926, and they can most just tell 10,000 of your closest friends to vote Judge Jamison.
All right. Thank you. The Honorable Judge Terry Jamison up for re-election in the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas, the Domestic Relations Division. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.